Welcome back, everybody, to the Gaming Careers Podcast, a weekly live stream covering all the news from the live streaming and content creation industry. On today's episode, we're going to be chatting about YouTube removing the dislike counter from all content, Twitch adding categories, emotes, incubators, and changes to subscriptions, and Twitter Blue launching their new paid subscription service. For any new watchers and listeners, this is a live show that we do pretty much every single Monday here on the Gaming Careers YouTube channel, so please do feel free to join in the chat. Let us know your thoughts on the topics that we're discussing. But first of all, let's meet our co-host. He's here pretty much every single week. Ben, how you doing, mate?
Doing good, man. Pretty much every week. We did miss last week. Somebody called us out on that, but think we can blame Pete for that one, maybe. I would swap the blame every once in a while on whose fault it is, but we're back today. I love Mondays because it's podcast day. Very excited for everything we have to talk about today.
Yeah, so I mean, let's not waste any time, dive straight in. First bit of news that we're going to be covering is Logitech including some new tools in their G-Hub software. Let me get the topic up here and bring up the screen share as well. So yeah, I've raved about the NVIDIA broadcast software in a couple of videos now. For those of you that haven't seen any of these videos or any of the coverage of NVIDIA broadcast, the main part that seems to be used the most is definitely the background noise elimination. So it's using some of the cores of your graphics cards, particularly the newest graphics cards, to help eliminate and learn from background noise. And they seem to have partnered up with Logitech. This isn't the first partnership that we've seen between NVIDIA and like a software company, because I know that also Elgato's latest update of their Wavelink software, where it's currently in beta testing still, where you're going to be able to add VST plugins. They've worked again with NVIDIA to be able to add this noise removal as a plugin to that. So NVIDIA are certainly open to like other companies including this cool technology to eliminate background noise into their software. But for anyone that's using Logitech G-Hub and like any of their supported microphones, which includes the Blue microphones, which Logitech owns, so things like the Yeti X, I think the Pro version one is called, as well as a few different other microphones, can now eliminate background noise from directly within G-Hub, which is pretty cool. I don't know if you have a whole lot to add on that, Ben, or if it's just more of an announcement for those people that are using those microphones.
Yeah, I mean, this is a cool partnership. It's a great piece of software if you do have background noise like AC or something that can be pretty annoying. I think if you scroll down, there's the list of six or seven microphones that are supported with this, which does include the Blue Yetis, I think is the most notable in my opinion. But not all, you know, just the Yetis, not the other line of Blue microphones, which is kind of interesting. So if you use one of those microphones, that's a nice feature to have just baked into the software now.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth mentioning here that if you don't own a Blue microphone or one of these headsets, then you can, of course, take advantage of NVIDIA broadcast as long as you have one of their later, more recent GPUs. And I think even the old version GPUs also now work with NVIDIA RTX Voice, yep. I think they're calling it, like the old version of the software. But yeah, for those that want to dive into that, they can dive into that more. This was a pretty funny bit of news that we saw this week, which we haven't seen for a while, but streamers being hit with DDoS attacks, mainly because this game was developed in about a week's time by like a Twitch streamer themselves. I saw the YouTube video that this like coder uploaded of him building effectively what is Squid Game, but they couldn't call it Squid Game, so they called it Crab Game, I think, on Twitch, which was just like a proximity chat version of like some of the mini games that were seen in Netflix's popular show Squid Game. But he obviously coded it so quickly that he forgot to like include some protection for streamers' IPs, and like some of the really, really big streamers were playing this with each other, and obviously that's like going to be really popular. But there was a couple of IP addresses, XQC and SodaPoppin, both got DDoS attacks, so like their internet went down for multiple days until they could get their ISPs to reset their IP addresses. So maybe a little bit of a PSA for people to be careful, you know, playing new games like this. Obviously, not everyone's going to be targeted because not everyone is a huge streamer with a massive following, but it's just worth it reiterating, I think, for some streamers out there that, you know, these things were, I think, more prominent a few years ago. You know, software like Discord has worked hard to be able to hide creators' IPs. Like beforehand, I remember maybe it was Ventrilo or like one of the other like TeamSpeak type softwares. It was really easy to get somebody's IP if they were Skype. In a public server. Yeah, Skype has had its own problems. So there are certain steps that you can do to make sure that you try and avoid this kind of thing. But it was just a comical thing that I saw and thought was worth putting in the doc.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add on this one other than, you know, it's funny to see this come back after years. I remember the league used to have this problem all the time a couple years ago with Skype, things like that. So like Pete said, just be careful if you're playing new games, new indie games like this that may not have all the security setup that some of the more popular games and the AAA developers do, because this stuff can happen. It's also kind of interesting because I think some of them live in the same house. So if one of them gets DDoSed, it can affect everybody and everything that happens there, which is kind of interesting. But yeah, hopefully it's pretty niche for just the big streamers.
DJ Sammy in the chat saying that they were thinking of playing this game too. I think it has now been patched. I saw like the developer tweet that he'd done something stupid in the initial code base and he was fixing it. And I've seen streamers playing it since. So I think it's now been fixed. But I guess on a tangent, it was kind of interesting to see how quickly a game like this being developed ended up being really popular on Twitch. It shows how important like these games where streamers can play with each other and screw each other over. So exactly the same as the Fall Guys experiment and Among Us. You're like, yeah. They're instantly popular, these games. And this was one developer. And obviously like he doesn't own any of the IP for Squid Game. And if it was actually sold and sold loads of millions of dollars, there would definitely be a lawsuit from Netflix. But it's interesting to think from a game developer's point of view, how important it is to think about Twitch streamers now, streamers on any platform, because of how popular they can make your game. And this is like a really janky game, but it was really entertaining to watch streamers just purely because they're like screwing each other over and you're actually more watching for the interaction.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we'll see more games like this probably in this vein that really play up the interaction between people that are streamers and can sabotage each other, things like that. Even Among Us, you know, that was a pretty small game overall and that really took over Twitch. I know they had a patch recently to try and kind of revive it a little bit. I'm not sure if that worked, but I think, you know, it kind of proves that if you're an indie game developer, you can make stuff like that can catch on as long as you can kind of get it in front of the right people. And then it's viral after that sense once they start streaming it. So I think we'll see more of that in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I hope so too. These games are always fun to watch and fun to play for streamers. Next, a small little announcement that I saw come out today and a few people have been pinging me about in the Gaming Careers Discord as well as other Discords that I know that both you and I are a part of. TC Helicon, the company behind the Go XLR, has announced today a new microphone called the Go XLR microphone, really, you know, pushing the boat out with these naming conventions. Which, not surprisingly, is an XLR microphone that is designed, you know, to work specifically with the Go XLR, but I'm sure works with many different interfaces. And I think they also announced like a specific XLR cable, which I don't know if is just filled with buzzwords or if it is actually, you know, any better. Because the company behind TC Helicon, like they do make a lot of proper tour gear for musicians, so they might have actually put some of that expertise into developing like a really sturdy, well shielded XLR cable. But we'll see about the microphone. I actually have known about this for a little while, but I didn't get one ahead of release, so it was meant to arrive today. I think the latest delivery schedule I saw is it's tomorrow, so I won't be able to get a video out about it for release, but certainly interesting. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about the price point yet because I haven't seen that been announced. So I'm going to respect the NDA that I've signed and not talk about that yet. But I certainly will be able to use this microphone, let's say next week in the podcast. So if that's something that I've talked about doing that a few times, and I know Podcastage, who is a great YouTuber that we've had on the show before, he does that in his weekly podcast. Like every week he uses a new microphone that he's been sent, and even if it's not great for the audio of the podcast, he gets like an hour of use, and then people that are interested in the microphone can then go and listen for an hour. So I think that could be quite interesting. If you remind me, Ben, hopefully I won't forget. As long as this arrives tomorrow, then I can get it set up so that we can use it next week for the full podcast, and then we can talk about it a little bit more and thoughts on how it sounds, if it's awful. I mean, if it's really awful, then I obviously won't use it for the podcast. But yeah, what were your thoughts? Did you hear anything about this or seen any early coverage of it? I'm not sure if any of the other YouTubers have received it early enough to make a video.
I haven't yet seen any videos from reviewers. I just saw this announced today. I think it was at 2 a.m. in the morning my time. So this just got announced. It's interesting to me. I did think the cable was funny. They spent half the video talking about the cable, the Go XLR cable, and it just kind of seems like an XLR cable to me. But the mic itself was interesting. I know the Go XLR was super popular and still is pretty popular in setup. So obviously they have a pretty good brand name to carry into the mic. I also think it's interesting that I'm pretty sure the people who made the original Go XLR left and are making their own microphone too. Mm-hmm. I've seen I'm sure you know more about that than I do. But it's kind of interesting that there's two microphones now coming out from kind of the same team. So I'm really curious to see which one ends up on top or which is more popular. But we'll have to see. I mean, ultimately, it depends on how it sounds. So I'll be looking forward to your review and everybody else who's doing that kind of stuff soon.
Yeah, it's worth reiterating what you've said. So effectively, a lot of the team that worked at TC Helicon when the original Go XLR was released have since left and started their own company called Beacon, who are releasing some products within the next 12 months, let's just say. So yeah, that's going to be interesting whether, you know, we're going to be able to see direct comparisons. And obviously this is a much bigger market than just those two companies. When we're talking about XLR microphones, this is huge, and companies have been making microphones for literally decades and decades. The SM7B that we're both using is literally like 20 plus years old in its early iterations. So interesting. I can't really offer any opinion because I haven't tested it yet. I wish I could, but if I could, I probably would have put it in a video. So we'll see. If it's amazing, maybe it will make it into a video, or if it's really bad, maybe it'll make it into a video, but we'll see. I'm certainly not under any NDA to say good things about it. Just can't talk about the details that I've received yet until I see some reviews going up. We talked about this next topic a little bit, but we've actually got some data now where we can talk about it a little bit more. We're talking about Mr. Beast and his alternative language YouTube channel. So probably 6 months ago now, we covered that he'd released some of his videos with dubbed Spanish. So this isn't just subtitles. This is a paid voice actor to be Mr. Beast, but saying the words in Spanish. So the whole video you can watch is in Spanish. And it's not just the channel in Spanish that he's released. He now has Brazil. I guess this is Russian. And then he's also got another channel that he's uploaded in Spanish. But he tweeted about how well these videos are performing. And you can see from these screenshots, for the people listening on audio, multiple of these videos re-uploaded into Spanish are hitting 10 million views, which is obviously the kind of numbers that Mr. Beast is hitting on the original English upload. So it doesn't seem like having dubbed audio is affecting the performance at all. And in fact, he's doing the work once, probably paying a company to then do this little translation bit, re-uploading the video, and then still hitting 10 million plus views with all of that AdSense, and any advertisers he works in with will be included in that. So like, he's effectively doubling, tripling his view count just by redubbing the videos into a different language. And I mean, this kind of ties into the Squid Game thing. You know, they released Squid Game, I think, in like 30 plus different countries with dubbed audio to various levels of success. But is this going to be a major point, I think, going forward, Ben, where creators are, or certainly big creators that can afford to do this, are going to start to really try and capitalize on all the different languages of people on YouTube and Twitch around the world?
I think this is going to be huge in the future. And I'm glad that Mr. Beast is kind of paving the way here. And really, when you see the numbers that he's pulling on these other channels with the same content just translated, it's kind of a no-brainer at some point. And not to say that you're going to get millions of views if you go out and make a translation of your video per se, but the concept is huge because for all creators, you're going to hit a cap at some point of your own language. And of course, that cap is huge, but you could hit a lot more people, kind of like using different streaming platforms, using different languages. There's a whole range of people out there who might be interested in your stuff who just don't know about it because it's not in their language. So I think we'll see a lot more people doing this, a lot of agencies and services that will come up and probably make it easy to translate your videos and maybe live streams too. There's some of that on Twitch. It's not great yet, but I think more translation stuff is going to get huge in content as we go forward. So I would love to try this out if there's like an easy way to do it in the future, because if you look at certain games too on Twitch, like there are certain categories of games that are dominated by a certain language or outside of the world where you're in, essentially. So like for League of Legends, it's growing, but the Spanish community is dominating that game right now. So if you're an English streamer, then you're kind of declining. So I think if you can break into these other audiences, then suddenly you have all this untapped potential. I don't know. I'm really excited about this whole concept, really.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And that's being shared in the chat as well. Some people saying that they think it's a smart move from Mr. Beast's front. Who do you think is going to be the first streamer that moves their VODs and videos across to multiple different languages? Because it's got to be somebody big enough that has the audience already.
Yeah.
Who's the Mr. Beast of streaming?
I think it's, I say Ludwig. I feel like he gets YouTube so well as a streamer. So I could see him doing it with his videos. I have seen, so Faker obviously streams in Korean playing League. There is live translation into English as you're watching his stream. And so that's what I mean. Like, there's kind of some things out there for live content, but it's not great because it's, you know, it's subtitles, it's not dubbed, which I think is pretty big for the general audience. So I'm curious to see on the actual live piece, but in terms of actual YouTube content from Twitch, I think it's got to be Ludwig.
I can definitely see, I mean, this is cheating a little bit, but some of the big agencies, the big sort of esports agencies doing it, something like 100 Thieves, if they do a really big production video, then I could see them, you know, maybe starting a channel in Spanish and things like that. You've got to think about whether it translates. And clearly Mr. Beast has proven that these like epic video ideas, and that they're always, you know, centered around money or huge numbers in some way or another, they translate really well. And we've been, you know, multiple times on this podcast, we've looked at the, is it called Twitch Atlas? The thing that always gets posted to Reddit, where you can see like the communities and like where the viewership links up between different streamers. And we've seen how quickly those Spanish and Brazilian and Russian communities have grown, and like they can't be ignored anymore. So something that we got to follow, and you know, props to Mr. Beast for doing it and proving that it works, because I agree with you. I think people are going to follow and earn more money just by doing the quick and easy thing of hiring a few voice actors to translate. And this is good for any voice actors. If you speak multiple languages, get yourself on somewhere like Fiverr, you know, show that your voice is similar to Ludwig's, and then you know, you'll get hired in no time. Or maybe just send him a message. That's a really easy way to get some free money for every video that he uploads. So going back towards, I guess, a little bit more streaming stuff, Facebook news, and we've made a promise to ourselves that we're going to cover Facebook as closely as we can, because we keep seeing it growing and growing in all of these different yearly and quarterly reports. They've announced some updates for subscriptions on their platform, or for creators, and how they work with subscriptions. Do you want to cover a bit of this? I've got the screen share open.
Sure, yeah. So this is just a slew of different subscription updates that Facebook is adding to the platform, which are mostly coming in line with other platforms, I think, except for a couple things that stand out to me. So it's a pretty long article, but you can go through all the different ways they've added features to Facebook. I think the first one is just talking about the subscription program and how much you earn, and the bonus program that I think is the main difference between Facebook and other platforms. So they say through the end of 2021, you'll get a bonus of $5 to $20 for every sub for invited creators only, up to a cap, I think, of like 10,000, if I read this right. Yeah. So that's pretty interesting, and it is invite only. So it's not like you can just jump on and take advantage of this, unfortunately. But I guess this is kind of like their incubator program on Facebook, where they want to extend it to certain creators and really incentivize new streamers to come out or existing ones to push their channel with some monetization rewards. So I think this is an awesome feature and the standout one of the list I've got here.
Yeah, I agree. And we've previously seen, and they actually mentioned this again in the article, that Facebook has forfeited any fees from what creators earn from subscriptions as well, I think until 2023. So this is on top of that. They're clearly trying to throw money at this problem that they have of trying to get more streamers and creators on their platform. So not only now do you keep 100% of the fee that your subscriber gets charged when they subscribe to you, minus taxes or fees or anything like that, but the actual fee that Facebook takes is now zero. But also there is now this bonus of up to $10,000, which is $5 to $20 for every single new subscriber that you get until the end of the year. So yeah, they're clearly trying to push for more people to stream on their platform for the end of 2021. And if you have a medium-sized audience, this actually will make a difference, I think. Like, you're not just talking about a couple of percent here. You're talking about actual real money that you could reinvest into learning new skills or investing in new equipment that you need as a streamer. So really interesting. I don't know if it's going to be enough to actually push people across, because in my head, like, Facebook is still a bit of a meme platform, but maybe it can't be anymore, because it literally is competing with YouTube, and we constantly talk about how YouTube versus Twitch. So it's got to be that three-horse race.
Yeah, I think this is huge. Again, the problem is that it's invite only, so it's not open to everybody. But for creators that have this option, I mean, if you're doing, let's say, a $5 sub, essentially, and then you get a $5 to $20 bonus on top of that sub, at a minimum, that doubles your subscription every time you get a subscription. And then at the top end, you're getting five times actually the revenue of a normal sub compared to Twitch. Actually, no, compared to Twitch would be, I can't even do that math, $250 compared to $25, right? Like 10 times more money, which is crazy. So you can have a much smaller audience, but be making more money essentially on Facebook with this monetization. Of course, there's caveats with the 10K cap and it only being this year, But still, I mean, it's pretty good incentive if you have that option. It'd be hard to pass that up, I think.
Another thing that they've announced is a way for you as a content creator or a streamer to send people a really easy link to subscribe to you without Apple or Android taking their cut. And we all know that Apple's is like super high, like 30%, I think they charge. And this kind of ties into some news that we have about Twitch a little bit later. But effectively, if you were watching a streamer on Facebook on a mobile app, like an iOS, an iPhone, and you subscribe to them, then 30% of that fee would be going to Apple, not even to Facebook. So Facebook have built sort of a way around that, where you can now easily like share a tool where Facebook won't collect any fees and Apple or Google won't collect any fees, and people can subscribe to you directly. Kind of ties into the Twitch news. I don't want to get ahead of myself because we've kind of bundled all of the Twitch news in together. So let's cover the last little update that Facebook have, which is new earning breakdowns. So easier way of being able to see your estimated earnings and any fees that were taken. So you can see here, like the Apple fees and the Google fees are even calculated for you. But the most interesting thing, I think, outside of the bonuses, is that they're now allowing you to have your subscribers' emails. So you can download that info, add it to a mailing list as your subscribers, because they now, like anyone that has opted in to subscribing to you through the terms and condition, has also opted in to like you being contactable by you. So obviously not to be abused, but this is something that Twitch has done as well. And it's a cool little update because Facebook traditionally, at least in my head, has always been the platform that's tried to own your audience, like to the max degree. You create a page for your business and your interaction with your audience all of a sudden is behind like a paywall that Facebook owns, and they can charge you to be able to promote to people that have liked your page. And it just seems crazy. So this was an interesting spin on that, where they now do provide you with a list of emails if you need to contact all of your subscribers. So what are you thinking on that, Ben?
I think this is a cool feature. Twitch has had it for a while, but I don't think many people know that you can actually do this on Twitch. I don't know if the feature exists on YouTube, maybe, but it'd be, I guess, for your subscribers.
I don't think it does. And wasn't it was available on Twitch and they removed it. And I don't know if they temporarily removed it, because remember, it was when hot tub streamers were promoting their OnlyFans via the email feature. So I don't know if it was a temporary removal and they ended up bringing it back and maybe adding some restrictions to the kind of links that you could share, or if it's back fully now. We'll have to check that. Or if somebody in chat has access to it, maybe they could check whilst we're live.
We'll have to check. Either way, I think it's a nice to have feature. I'm curious how many people actually have ever sent out an email to their subscribers, because I think people just don't know how to use it very well. And it is pretty easy to use with something like MailChimp or some email service to just send out updates to your subscribers, but it also takes work to do that outside of streaming. But it's a great option if you want to have that other way to contact people. It's kind of in line with the other features that are here too, like having the subscriber badges and things like that. I think are just kind of having parity with Twitch at this point, which are good features. And we saw YouTube do this really the whole last year, was catch up to Twitch with some of the features that they are missing out. So it's good to see that YouTube has those too. I still think that the thing that I'm most excited about for all this is the bonus program. And we'll have to kind of see what people do with the other features, like the email stuff. Maybe Facebook could make some easier ways to email people that are built in there. Because I know Twitch right now, or at least you just give you the emails list, but not really make a nice template to send to people. Things like that could be a cool way to engage your audience.
Yeah, and I don't think Facebook has that either. It seems to be just you can export the list of email addresses to then use in some mailing list software like MailChimp or something like that. We can tie this in really nicely to the next section if we just jump ahead a few bits. But we'll do our whole Twitch updates section, but we'll focus on talking about sending emails to subscribers, because Twitch seems to be sending out some interesting resubscription emails to people that have subscribed to you previously who are about to expire. Zach Bussey has tweeted this. He sort of shares a vertical screenshot to show just how intrusive of an email this one is. For the podcast listeners, I'll try and describe it as much as I can. There's an image of like a Windows error message with the button sub sub sub, as if like you're gonna run out and it's urgent. And then there's probably about four or five different locations where it tells you about how you should resubscribe because your subscription is about to run out and you're going to lose ad-free viewing, customer emotes, subscriber badges, and more. I understand why Twitch is doing this, and Twitch is certainly not unique in, you know, contacting customers that are about to lose the subscription. Pretty much any business with any kind of sense will do this. But this was like an interesting way of doing it, I think, where it kind of feels like panicky. Maybe some viewers will be like, oh, I won't be able to watch this streamer anymore unless I resubscribe. You know, it could be seen as a little bit confusing. And really, the fact that the creator had no input on this or ability, you know, if it was the creator's option to enable or disable this, then I could see it maybe being less controversial. But yeah, it seemed a little bit over the top, and maybe they're going to dial it back for future ones. But what do you think, Ben?
This is really interesting because I think it was supposed to come off as funny, or like supposed to be over the top in a funny way, but it kind of comes off as desperate despite that. I counted there are 12 mentions of the word sub in this like one screenshot of the email. Which, like to your point, I think it just comes off as it's panicky, and it might make you think like, what's happening? Am I going to lose my Twitch access? What's going on? And so I don't think this was done very well. I get what they were going for. Especially that top image where it's got like the millions of windows and all the faces, and it says sub, sub, sub. It's like, oh my gosh. All right, this is a little too much farther in the woke marketing direction. So maybe just pull that back a little bit. I think it's cool to give them a discount, but it is the discount on a 6-month sub, which I can't imagine it's being used that much. Maybe it is, versus like, you know, get a discount on your next sub or something or whatever it is. I get why they want to go for it, but it just came off as too much, I think.
Yeah, apparently some of the users in chat have seen these actually appearing in their inbox. So this isn't just a small test that Zach found one screenshot from, or it arrived in his inbox. It seems to be a wider problem. It's not even a test, maybe. Maybe it's the official way of doing it. I need to subscribe to more streamers on Twitch, clearly. But yeah, I mean, not particularly surprising, but just interesting to know that as a Twitch streamer, this is possibly what's going out to people that have subscribed to you before and are about to run out of subscription. So panic stations all around. What else have we got from the Twitch updates world? Well, there's a new category for all those zookeepers and animal streamers. What have they decided to call it? Let me make sure I get this right. Hot tubs? No, that's not it, is it? Animals, aquariums, and zoos. That's actually kind of close to hot tubs and beaches. Aquarium, kind of a hot tub. You know, beach and a zoo are kind of similar. Not too different, but yeah, there's a new category out. Apparently, there's quite a big collective of streamers who are doing like wildlife streams or conservation and things like that. So there has been a big call from people to build a new category. So yeah, cool if you're one of these streamers. Do you now have a new category? You no longer need to compete in the big just chatting category anymore?
To your point, I think I saw somebody had done like a dress up as like a horse or something during the hot tub peak days. And so the top reply I saw to this being announced was finally they have a place to go, and it was everyone dressed up as animals going into this category. So this is cool, I guess. I have seen some legitimately cool streams of aquariums and zoos, and this is a place for them now that don't have to get lumped into all the art just chatting and stuff. So if you just want to watch cute animals on Twitch, then you have a whole category now, which is pretty nice.
What else do we have? There was a new I don't know how you describe this really, but a new way for musicians to apply for some help with their journey as becoming a Twitch streamer called The Collective. Do you want to take this one, Ben?
Yeah, this is just another incubator program, but I think it has a more kind of fleshed out landing page if you are interested in it. I think it's really aimed at creators, musicians who aren't yet streaming or are kind of new to streaming who want to learn how to use Twitch more effectively. So there's a whole Q&A at the bottom of things like, how do I start streaming and who gets accepted? Who's this best for? Stuff like that. But basically, it's going to be that Twitch will support your music on the platform with some opportunities, I believe. So they kind of walk you through how to start streaming, first of all. And then they will do things, I think, with some partners here like Rolling Stone and Amazon Music, stuff like that. Well, they'll give you opportunities. They say prioritize discovery, promotion, and activations. So it's a little vague. But it kind of sounds like you'll get better placement on the front page from Twitch, which I have seen with music already. But then also maybe some chances with Rolling Stone to do like interviews or feature on Amazon Music site or something. So we're not totally sure what exactly it'll be yet, but basically it's in our incubator program really targeted at music this year.
I mean, this makes so much sense. If it can actually help with promotion for musicians on Amazon Music, it's probably not the biggest platform for them, but it's probably in the top five, you know, like Spotify, and YouTube Music and things like that. Like Amazon Music probably is up there. If you can get prioritized discovery on a platform like that, you know, featured in the week's hottest playlists, or, you know, I can't pretend that I know what Amazon Music looks like when you open it as an app because I've never used it. But what, however they lay out their music, if there's a way of, as a musician, being prioritized and promoted, then why wouldn't you sign up to do something like this? You probably have to stream once a week on Twitch and try and make it engaging. But this makes so much sense. I wish there was more of a connection between Twitch and Amazon. Like that, mm-hmm. I feel like they could think of more ideas like this where they can help encourage creators to stream on Twitch and give them benefits on Amazon's other products. And Amazon Music is a great example of that. But maybe we'll get more writers that could be featured on Audible or, you know, on Kindle or something like that. I could certainly see it. But if you're a streamer and or a content creator and you're thinking about streaming music creation or something to do with your musical process, then definitely look at applying to The Collective. Again, it'll be linked in the show notes once we finish the podcast. DJ Wheat, Ben, has announced that he is retiring from Twitch after 10 years. So he has been there since the very, very start. And as of January, he's going to be hanging his hat up and starting a new adventure. We'll see what that is. But this is kind of like, I know that we kind of roasted him for his, you know, having to host some difficult questions on like the whatever the Twitch show is called, where they answer difficult questions. But he has really been an OG like throughout this process. He has seen it grow from like a tiny, tiny company to what it is today, mm-hmm. and through the sale to Amazon and all those kind of things. So worth bringing up and giving a mention. For those of you that don't know DJ Wheat or haven't seen him, you probably have seen him on stage at TwitchCon or on some of these live streams or in announcement tweets or something like that. He's a real OG and he'll be greatly missed, I think, from the Twitch team.
Yeah, he's one of the people who also was representing Twitch publicly a lot on those streams that we talked about, but also at things like TwitchCon. He was always up there talking about some of the new announcements and things like that. So it's going to be kind of sad to lose that kind of person, especially at Twitch. I know we've talked about at YouTube how they have, you know, people like Fwiz stepping out and doing videos and speaking up about kind of what the company's doing. And there haven't been a whole lot of people like that at Twitch besides DJ Wheat. So hopefully we'll get some more people kind of coming up, because I think that really helps connect with what Twitch is doing and make it more personable and not just a brand that you're streaming for, essentially. So I would definitely miss him, and he's done a lot for the not just Twitch, but live streaming as a whole.
We're all going to be super sad when they can't find a replacement, and it's just going to mean more Emmett hosting these events. And we're going to go full back to robot CEO who can't really articulate, you know, his opinion or passion for the project. But yeah, what else do we have to cover with the Twitch news? The app on Switch. So yeah, I mean, I didn't think this was huge news myself. And then I saw that this had like 44,000 likes on Twitter, that the Twitch app is now available on Nintendo Switch. So for all of you that own a Nintendo Switch and want to browse Twitch whilst you're...
Twitch on a Switch.
I mean, this isn't streaming from your Switch. It's worth mentioning that. It's just for browsing. But I know that some people like use their Nintendo Switch as like a HDMI player to their TV. So I guess now you could watch Twitch on your TV if you didn't have a smart TV in some way. A little mention there. And the last thing, which we could have tied in probably better on the resubscription front, is the monthly reoccurring subs on iOS. So Twitch has launched the ability to subscribe and resubscribe to streamers whilst you're using the iPhone app. But as we mentioned before, Apple does take a 30% cut, and that is passed on in the price. So the prices are higher if you do this. So maybe let your viewers know that if they instead just opened up their browser on their phone and went to twitch.tv/subs/your username, they'd be able to subscribe for less cost, because then Apple wouldn't be taking the cut, and then Twitch makes the price better. So it's cool that the feature is out, and certainly a lot of people are going to be using it because they probably don't know that it's more expensive, but it's just worth mentioning and letting streamers and viewers know that you can save money just by opening up Safari on your iOS device and just going to a URL. It's a tiny, tiny bit more work, and you can save yourself a good chunk of money by doing it. But that is unfortunately the world that we live in with app stores and Apple taking 30% cut. And we've covered loads of news about various different publishers going to war in lawsuits with Apple. We've got the ongoing Epic Games one with the Fortnite store where they tried to get around it. But yeah, it's just worth mentioning. It is now available and there is cheaper ways of doing it. I think that's it for... Oh no, one more thing. One more thing. You got the last one. You can go for that.
Yeah, sure. So the big, maybe one of the bigger ones here, kind of, in that same vein of monetization is Amazon Twitch is testing an instant sub option. So this one's kind of interesting because it's no longer, sorry, gift option on Twitch. So you're essentially just clicking an instantly gifting the subs without the confirmation, very similar to how Amazon has the one click to buy. And that makes it more enticing to just go buy the thing without thinking about it. At Zach mentioned here, you can kind of see the Amazon influence, which is something we've said for a while about what Twitch has been doing. And I totally agree. I think this definitely would probably lead to more subs gifted. And I think that's why they made it. So I don't know if it's actually fully out yet. But this apparently was seen over in Canada. And so I assume that we'll see it in other places soon.
Yeah, there's a couple of screenshots that we can share here. It's this sort of lightning symbol that they're using. And I think Amazon has like a one click icon or something like that. They call it one click checkout or something like that, where you don't have to enter your delivery details or your payment details. It's just remembered them. You click one button and it's ordered. And that's the influence, as Zach points out, now coming across to Twitch. It's kind of dangerous because let me show the second image here. You can see like you could quite easily gift 50 subs with now one click, no confirmation. So
yep,
you got to be careful about who's on your phone. You know, don't give your phone to your child who likes watching Twitch and be surprised by a $350 bill that comes. I mean, I can see why they've done it, and I can see like it's clearly successful on Amazon, so why wouldn't they do it here? And maybe some people really want it because they don't want the confirmation happening over and over again. But yeah, interesting. Again, it just seems like Twitch is focusing on features that make it easier for them to make money.
Yep, and
obviously exactly. Streamers do benefit from this as well, but I think it's at the cost of viewers potentially misclicking or, you know, not wanting to go through with an action, and it's sort of being taken away from them.
Yeah, and Velocinator in the chat says it's probably on bits now too, is what he thinks. So that's probably true. I would not be surprised if this comes to all ways to monetize on Twitch soon, just to make it more easy, because it seems like a very easy way for them to probably increase their revenue by just making that switch. So I think we'll probably see it for everything coming soon.
Awesome. I think it's probably time just to thank today's sponsor. So hopefully this all works. I'm going to read out the ad read now. So support for the Gaming Careers podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who are the best in men's below the waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels, and they just launched their fourth generation trimmer, the Lawn Mower 4.0. Manscaped engineered the ultimate groin and body trimmer by focusing on intelligent functionality and incredible, comfortable grooming experience. Their fourth generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. I mean, I appreciate how many buzzwords they can fit into an ad read. I need to learn how I can introduce my videos with this kind of, you know, oomph at the start of every single video. But you can join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with an exclusive offer just for you, 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code GamingCareers at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code GamingCareers at manscaped.com. I mean, we've got the holidays coming up. This is the perfect time to, you know, gift yourself something or gift something to your significant other or to your mates. We've both used the products over the past sort of couple of weeks, and I've got to say I'm really impressed. I mean, the number of trademarks that they have for Skin Safe and Manscaped and Lawn Mower, like they're clearly putting a lot of effort into the engineering behind these products, and we appreciate them supporting this podcast. And if you would like to grab yourself 20% off, we'd appreciate that too, because it helps us keep creating these podcasts. All right, Ben, onto Twitter Blue. You can introduce this one.
Sure, yeah. So we've talked about Twitter Blue a couple times in the podcast in the past, I believe, but it is officially rolling out now. So this basically is a slew of upgrades you get to Twitter by subscribing to Twitter Blue that are kind of different, and some are similar to other platforms, some are new. So just going through the list here of what is actually included in Twitter Blue. The first one is ad-free articles. And this one actually is the most interesting to me. Essentially, if you see an article on the timeline and you click on it, then you won't have ads through some of their partners. So they have The Atlantic on here as an example, which I think is kind of cool because it's not saying that you're gonna avoid ads on Twitter, to my understanding. It's actually on the article site, which I've seen a lot of articles lately, which do have that pop-up of, you know, we see the ad blocker, remove that. Otherwise, you can't read the article. Especially on mobile, that can be more difficult too. So I think this is a nice feature. But in Twitter Blue, you have any thoughts on this one, Pete?
Yeah, it's interesting that you think this is the most useful, because this is probably the one that I skimmed past the quickest, because I wasn't thinking it'd be particularly useful for me. I'd have to see the list of websites that they have this enabled for, because there's certainly some that I click and it's like behind a paywall and I'm like, well, why are you promoting this to me when I can't even read it? So yeah, if it's a decent list, you know, covering some of the websites that I'd like to use more, then maybe it's worth considering. But there's certainly a few other benefits for your subscription. You get a list of top articles now, so these aren't necessarily ordered by the ones that are promoted or most talked about overall on Twitter, but also most shared in your network. There's some customization options for navigation and I think like the Twitter icon and things like that. Maybe the biggest one, the one that people talk about the most, is the ability to undo a tweet. Now, I don't know if you can technically say this is undoing a tweet, because it's not. All it's doing is scheduling a tweet for 20 seconds time and giving you the chance to cancel the tweet being sent. It's not actually being sent during this buffer time. But effectively, a lot of people, particularly people with larger followings, hate that you can write a tweet very quickly, send the tweet, and then realize 20 seconds later that you have made a spelling mistake, or maybe you've cited a wrong source or called the product the wrong version number. And then because you have a big Twitter account, you've just got hundreds of replies of people telling you how stupid you are. And you're like, it would be really useful if I could edit this tweet and just make the small correction. But then there's obviously problems with editing tweets. You don't want to be able to edit a tweet and say something completely different, and then all the people that have retweeted it are promoting that thing that says something different. So there is difficulties behind this for Twitter. But I think this is funny that this is called undo tweet, because really it's if you use Gmail, like a lot of the world does, it's exactly the same as how that works. You send an email and you have like 5 seconds, I think it is, with an option down in the bottom corner to undo your sent email.
Yep.
And all it hasn't actually sent yet. It's just giving you the time to read it and realize, oh, I didn't actually attach an attachment, or I spelt the word wrong, or I said the wrong date or something like that. But the weird benefit that you do get from this is you can kind of see what your tweet is going to look like, which is something that I struggle with a lot. Like, especially when you're uploading a video or a GIF or like an image and you're not sure how it's going to be cropped, that's going to be super useful. So in a way, I think this is the most useful feature, but also like the biggest cop out of a feature, because you're not actually editing tweets in any way. You're just scheduling them for 20 seconds time.
Yeah, it's weird. I agree with you that this is a nice feature, but it's funny because it's not what the feature is supposed to be. Like, they're selling it as an undo tweet feature, which, I mean, you can just delete the tweet really most of the time. But being able to preview is kind of nice, especially if you, a lot of times if you're typing in the tweet, it'll look different than when you typed it, when you actually see it go out with how the text is spaced and images and videos, to your point. So that's kind of a nice feature that's baked in there, if you can see how it looks before you send it, which we use even for like YouTube and Instagram, like checker sites to see how they look. So now it's just baked into the app, which is pretty cool. That said, I think there's like one or two more things here. There's Twitter Blue Labs, which I guess is early access to new features, which are, looks like things like longer video uploads and pinned conversations are pieces of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's most of everything that's in Twitter Blue. They're cool, but I don't see myself getting Twitter Blue personally. I don't think the undo feature or the ad-free articles are enough incentive to try to get this, but I'm curious your thoughts, Pete.
Yeah, so worth mentioning, I don't think this is launched in the UK yet. I think the reason this came back up into the news, even though we've covered it a few months ago, is because it's now launched in the US at a price of $3 a month. And a lot of the feedback that I saw was that people think that these are features that should just be included anyway in Twitter as an experience. And why are they behind a paywall? And I don't know if there's enough there for me to consider $3. Like, considering Netflix, I think, is like $5 or $6. Like, you're not going to get the same amount of use out of it. You get like all these TV shows with Netflix or Spotify or something like that. Like, here, really, what am I going to use that's really going to improve my time on Twitter? I guess for me, it's the previewing tweets, but I actually just have a burner account that I sign into and write my tweet. It has no followers and I look at how it looks and then I delete it and then I redo it on the Gaming Careers Twitter. So for me, it's not even really that good of a feature. I'm hoping that they're going to keep adding to this and maybe it becomes more useful in the future. But I know a lot of streamers and content creators like Twitter is like the easiest way to interact with their audience. So I thought it was worth covering now that it's actually launched in the US, since so many of the Gaming Careers followers are based there. And finally, maybe the talking point of the video. We like to save these for the end just to give everybody a chance to get into the live streams, because I realize it's earlier over in the US. Is the update this week that I've seen pretty much every creator talking about, which is YouTube removing dislike counts. I'm not going to share my opinion straight away, Ben. Let's hear yours, because maybe we disagree on something finally. Or maybe I'll just play devil's advocate and I'll change my opinion based on what you say.
Yeah, this is interesting because I've seen a lot of discussion on this topic, and I don't feel like I have a super strong opinion on it right away. Now, I'm not as invested in YouTube as Twitch and probably as you have been over the past couple of years. So I'm definitely interested to hear your thoughts on it. But my first thought was obviously, this is in response to YouTube Rewind, because that was the most disliked video, I believe, which they actually mentioned in the video. It was not, apparently. But I think it's kind of okay. The button's still there. So to be clear, you can still dislike videos. And if you're the creator, you can still go find your total dislikes, but it's not easily accessible and it's not public for people. So to be clear, you can still dislike the video and theoretically impact the video somehow. You just won't see it. I think this is okay, personally. I don't really care too much about it. I've seen the arguments, people saying that, well, you can't really quickly see if it's a waste of time. You know, you go to a video and it's got 8% downvotes on a tutorial, that tutorial is probably not going to be helpful for what you're looking for, so you leave and save some time. I get that, but it also, you can just scrub through the video really quickly and see if it helps you, and look at the comments, it's still going to be there. So I'm okay with it. I do think it kind of sucks to lose that piece of it, but it's not going to keep me up at night. But Pete, I'm curious to hear your thoughts, because I know I've seen some big creators even talk about this over the past couple of days too.
Yeah, we certainly have. I mean, I share a lot of the opinions that have been made by creators that I don't think it's a good move. I know a lot of platforms don't have a dislike function. So if you look at Instagram or Twitter, you can like things or you can do nothing, but there's no like way to actually dislike actively. And it's existed on YouTube for a long time. And I also use YouTube day to day. And for something where I need to find out how to do something, I do use the like to dislike ratio when I arrive at a video to know if it's going to help me. Like if I've got a bug with software, or if I need to learn how to do something that I don't know how to do, I'll type that into YouTube and I'll click on the first video and I'll straight away look at the like to dislike ratio to know if it's going to help me. Because for some reason, still some of the top promoted videos on that search term are ones that have 50 to 60 to 70% dislikes compared to likes. And you would have thought YouTube would work out which videos are actually helpful to people's search terms. And that's certainly something that they should be doing, and they are doing. But I don't understand the reason behind it. Like they're saying they're trying to help protect creators from like the mental health aspects. And I can certainly understand that from some perspective. But at the end of the day, like you said, creators can still see it. They can still find out how the video is done in terms of likes to dislikes. So I don't know if it's necessarily to do with that. I think it's much more likely that this is pressure from big brands that they want to work with, because we've seen countless examples of brands uploading videos or trailers or products that have been negatively received. And things have actually changed because of that. Like the example that I saw was the Sonic the Hedgehog, like CGI. When that was first released as a trailer, like it was one of the most disliked videos on YouTube, and it ended up getting changed. And who knows if it was actually the dislike counter or if it was people talking about it on Twitter that actually made the change happen. But it is a useful thing. And, you know, with things like YouTube Rewind, when they didn't do a good one, it was massively disliked. And the understanding that I had in terms of the YouTube algorithm was actually if somebody disliked your video, it wasn't a negative in terms of the algorithm. Actually, them showing any kind of interaction was just seen as a positive in terms of interaction. So you could actually encourage people to, you know, like the video if they liked it and disliked it if they didn't, because other than your own mental health of like seeing a like to dislike ratio, then there wasn't a massive effect on the algorithm. But I don't know how true that was. That could have just been hearsay. But I think in my opinion, obviously I create tutorials on YouTube, and the vast, vast, vast majority of my videos have very high like to dislike ratios, like 98%, 99%. So I don't necessarily get affected by looking at those kind of things. I'm more affected by how videos do perform in terms of views and click-through rate and watch time than like to dislike. But a lot of people have found my channel, and maybe the first time that they watch one of my videos they did straight away glance at likes to dislikes, and then they were like, oh, this is a highly liked video, I'm going to stay and watch it. And if that gets removed, then, you know, somebody else could create a really poor tutorial and they wouldn't know the difference between the two. So I think it's a bad change personally. I think there's been a lot of negative press around it, so YouTube are definitely listening. If you do want to hear more opinions about it, I would share two useful resources. The first one, Marcus Brownlee, who's a tech YouTuber who's had a really heavy influence on my view as being a creator. I did a video on it 3 days ago called Dear YouTube. I will link that down in the description once the live stream finishes, but definitely go and watch that because he's got a great perspective on why he thinks it should remain. And the other thing is another tech YouTuber, Linus Tech Tips, a huge channel similar to Marcus Brownlee's in the tens of millions of subscribers, has managed to secure an interview with YouTube's product manager who worked on removing or changing the dislike number feature that is being talked about. So they are going to be speaking to them. I don't think for a video. I think it's probably going to be personally. But has asked for any questions or examples of why it's a bad idea. So, you know, submit your ideas through Linus's tweet if you have any as to why you think the dislike counter should change. I will just mention, I think on the front of like mental health of creators, because obviously I've been a creator on this platform for a number of years, that it is a problem and there are steps that you can take, and maybe you shouldn't have to take them because they're outside of like YouTube's ecosystem, to try and secure your mental health. But I think that that's a cop-out reason as to why they built this feature, and I think the real reason is to protect brands, if I'm being totally honest. And you know, if a brand promotes a lot of products on YouTube and, you know, pays a lot for AdSense video pre-rolls that happen, and then they release an actual video and it gets disliked, they're probably messaging their YouTube partner person and saying, you know, this is disgraceful, we spend so much money on your platform and now we're getting all this negative light. So I think that's the real reason, but maybe I have a warped perception. So Ben, I'll let you have the final word.
Well, I think it's divisive. And so I'd actually love to hear, if you guys are in chat, give us your opinion on this. Do you think it's a good change? Do you not care? Or do you really want them to go back and think it was a very dumb change? Because I've seen mixed opinions so far from people, but I'd love to get a majority kind of view as we go here. I'm curious also if this is a thing where there's a minority of creators and viewers who are really speaking out against it, and maybe the majority of viewers don't care as much, but I could be totally wrong on that. Maybe people just really want it across the board. I, as a YouTube viewer, actually rarely look at the like to dislike ratio. I almost never look at that when I'm watching videos. So maybe I'm the exception, or maybe you guys are kind of the same way. But I also get the aspect from the creator, especially if you've been doing stuff around tutorials or reviews or how-tos, and the validation you get of just knowing as a viewer that this is something that's been watched and people upvoted it and really vouched for it, saving you time, make you feel more reassured about that content. So I get both sides of it, but that's just kind of my view on it. And I'd love to hear, even listeners too, if you guys are listening, let us know what you think about it as well.
I mean, the vast majority of people here are saying, you know, shill move for corporations, it's a dumb move. Masterstroke says brands know how to turn off the like to dislike ratio already, but they know it shows that they don't have a good idea or product if they want to hide it. And I completely agree. Like, as when you upload a video on YouTube, you can already turn off the ability to add captions or the ability to like or dislike the video. So yeah, if technically if YouTube wants to protect creators, then making that feature more prominent so that people could disable it could be a good idea. But it does look like the vast majority of people watching this live anyway do use the like to dislike ratio often when they're on a video, and they think it's vital. So yeah, interesting. But I'd love to hear from the audio listeners, like you said as well, Ben, to make sure that we're not, you know, touching off base here, because, you know, audio listeners, maybe they don't use YouTube at all, and that's why they listen on audio versus watching this live stream live. I think that is all the news that we have this week. We'll be back next week, I'm presuming, Ben, as long as you're around. It's your turn to take the blame if we don't go live next week, because you blamed it on me last week. So we'll be back next week with all the other creator news that we have and live stream updates. And you know, as we always do. It's great to have so many people participating in the chat. It really does make this a great podcast, and I get really excited to turn up to it every single week and see the same people and new people joining in the comments and offering their opinions. So a quick last thank you to our sponsor, Manscaped. Don't forget about the deal if you do want to go and grab yourself 20% off their kit. And we'll see you next week. Peace.
See ya.